tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we are speaking with Stuart Kroll. Stuart has been an advocate for animal rights for the last 15 years. He's participated in political advocacy for the welfare of animals, as well as actively participating in animal rescue. Stuart was a commodities trader from 1986 to 2008. It was after this period that his involvement in animal advocacy grew exponentially. Stuart's focus at this point is holding municipalities accountable for improving conditions in animal shelters. In the particular municipality in which he lives, there is no cat shelter whatsoever. His mission there is bringing one into existence. Stuart, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stacey. Appreciate you having me.
So first and foremost, before we take a deep dive into the situation and challenges that are facing you right now, how did you become so passionate about cats?
I guess it basically started, as you said, about 15 years ago. I was living in a town on Long Island called Port Washington. And somehow or another, I started feeding cats. But it was a small colony across the street from me. I started putting out a little bit of food. I guess one thing led to another, and then I decided to see if I could somehow get those cats off the street. They were somewhat friendly. I mean, I guess I'd call them semi-feral cats. And that basically sort of led to one thing after the other, and my involvement has grown exponentially ever since then.
So the colony of cats that you were involved with, you got them all. Did you do trapping and learn about trap, neuter, return there?
Right. We trapped all the cats. Everybody was fixed over there. We fed those cats. And it's when I started trying to get them off the street that I really learned a lot about what was going on at that point. I mean, I realized how difficult it was to place cats. Obviously, feral cats was extremely difficult. It was a whole learning experience that I went through in getting these cats and trying to place them.
So just to clarify, you are on Long Island, correct? So that folks know that you're speaking from that area and that Long Island works on a county system. Is that correct?
Correct. It's basically two counties, Nassau and Suffolk.
Okay. And then tell me a little bit. Let's start out telling us the journey. You were in two different towns. So tell me, here you are, a new person, just discovering what trap, neuter, return is like. What are the challenges for cats? What did you learn in those first couple of years?
Quite a bit, actually. What I really learned, amongst other things, was the fact that animal welfare, you wouldn't think so offhand, but animal welfare is very tied into politics. And that was a whole revelation to me. I mean, when I see all these cats on the street, you know, you wonder why they're there. Because, I mean, they don't belong there in reality. I mean, they're not like raccoons or whatever, possums. I mean, they're not really wild animals. They don't belong on the street. And in my estimation, not everybody would agree wholeheartedly, but they're on the street basically because A, you know, the neglect of people and people throw them out for various reasons. I mean, cost, a lot of things I don't agree with, allergies, what have you. But they're also on the street because municipalities are not doing their job. They're not fixing the cats properly. And in the case, to the extent that they need to be fixed, I mean, cats obviously multiply geometrically. And also in the town that I live in at this point, there's no cat shelter. And that's another problem because there's no place to take even friendly cats, which are the ones that would end up in a cat shelter. When people die, have no plans, which most people don't, to what's going to happen to the cats. Somebody gets ill and goes into a nursing home. I mean, all kinds of things happen, and they happened in our community. And the town was basically able to offer nothing. And that was very disheartening. But then I realized that there's a huge connection.
Yeah, there's a level of challenges around who is the ultimately responsible person for domestic animals in the community. Is it a municipal level of responsibility or is it an individual level of responsibility? Or there's private organizations, private nonprofit organizations that work to assist animals in the community too. And in the country, there's a variety of different levels of support. And I believe it's a combination of all of these factors. working together to get the necessary resources that our cats need to have access to. So if a family can't afford to get their cat spayed or neutered, we should do something to help them get that cat spayed or neutered so it's not going to have to go to a shelter or not have to be let out because it's spraying in the house. But then also, there's a municipal obligation to be there as an emergency safety net for our animals that are at risk of significant injury, or they already are injured and they need immediate rescue. Or as you were talking about a situation, someone dies in the household and there's no other family members. There's emergency response like the fire department happens. And then we have our private organizations that are also sort of involved in this quilt of protection for our cats. That's sort of my impression, but maybe I'm wrong in what you're thinking a municipal cat shelter should look like.
Well, I largely agree with your assessment. And I actually am involved. A lot of people are involved in one aspect of rescue. I mean, they're either trappers, they're rescuers, they donate money. I've sort of been involved in all of them at different degrees. So, I mean, I've got a somewhat, you know, maybe a little bit different perspective than most people do. And I actually started this thing out because I heard of things going on in the town of Hempstead, which is right next to the town that I live in, which is North Hempstead. Now, each town, each one of those municipalities consists of a number of towns. It's not one town. Hempstead, for instance, is the largest town in the country, the largest township. They have 800,000 people, and they were actually the only town in the country, just as an item of curiosity, that got the COVID relief money, which none of which, unfortunately, went to the cat shelter. But Hempstead, for instance, has a very large, they have an excellent shelter, and I got involved. They do TNR every day, and I got involved over there because they had animals that were being sent off to organizations that were, I would say, less than reputable. So they were sending these animals out, and therefore I spent about 5 years, I would say, going to every board meeting in Hempstead, speaking at every board meeting, and they had various protests and what have you, and I was doing my best in it to support that. And that sort of evolved. Things basically became much more acceptable, and I didn't even realize at first that the town that I lived in, North Hempstead, which is actually a very wealthy town, and I'm sure there are other towns that are going through the same thing. North Hempstead, where I live, is the only town on Long Island that has no cat shelter. Part of the problem is, by law, at least in New York State, they're required to take in dogs, but municipalities don't have to take in cats.
Right.
A law we're actually trying to get, we've spoken to some assembly people, some congress people, and we're trying to get that law changed. You know, every other place does have either a separate cat shelter or a joint cat shelter. Our town, of course, doesn't.
Uh-huh.
So we've been working at that, and I've been going to every meeting. We have protests right in front of town hall for the last couple of years at every meeting. We go to different events, and we've done a lot of different things to try to get attention, and we've made some progress with it. We also have had the worst TNR program that I'm aware of anywhere, which basically it has been one day a month. We're now trying to get a voucher program, and it looks like we have made some progress in getting a voucher program where citizens could actually get a certain amount of vouchers per month, take them to the actual dog shelter, and then they'll get appointments to have their cats fixed at no cost to themselves.
Okay.
But as a basis of comparison, in our town, you've been able to get cats fixed one day a month. What if it rains the night before? I mean, what if you have no place to put the cats, and you also have no place to recover the cats? Cats, female cats particularly, need at least 2 days in order to recover after being spayed. They have no place to take them.
Yeah.
So those are all problems that we're trying to get fixed.
Right. There are challenges in creating the infrastructure needed for TNR, and there are many people who do the recovery in their own homes. And I'm not saying that's ideal. I think it is ideal to have a community cat room in a municipal shelter. I think that the design of a cat shelter is probably a little bit different now than it would have been 20 years ago also, because you can have a community cat recovery room and a drop-off room there, and then the trappers can come in and they can bring the cats in at midnight when they've actually trapped them, rather than having to bring them to their house, and they can bring them into the facility right there to have them housed overnight before surgery. And then they do the surgery, and then they're picked up at the end of the day and or picked up the next morning and just released directly after that. There's a lot of new models for a cat shelter that is a little bit different than dog shelters. The cat shelter that you are familiar with in Hempstead, is it a pretty significantly large facility?
Yeah, the Hempstead Shelter, just as an interesting point, has an annual budget of $6.2 million.
That's fascinating.
I mean, a lot of that money goes to salaries. It's not all going, obviously, to the animals. But still, there's a substantial amount of money that is going to the animals. And there's certainly still things there that need to be worked on. But compared to what I'm dealing with here, and like I said, this is a well-to-do town. This isn't a poor town. In fact, North Shore Animal League is located in North Hempstead as well. See, the problem with a lot of this stuff is that there's not awareness. The average citizen is not, and even animal lover, is oftentimes not aware that our town doesn't take in cats. Either they think they do take in cats, or they think somehow North Shore Animal League is doing something to benefit the cats, which is not even remotely the case. So there's basically, there's no help available for the cats. I mean, none.
And so since you've started on this campaign, share a little bit. Have you gotten some positive traction, or what does the political temperature look like to you?
Well, we have gotten some positive traction in that the TNR program, the voucher program, we're waiting. Actually, there's an RFP, request for proposal, that is out there right now, as a matter of fact. The money has been allocated for the first 6 months of 2024. So once we get a couple of vets that agree to do it, which we think we have, just a formality, citizens will have another option, as well as the one-day-a-month program. So that is progress, and that was hard-fought progress. Dealing with the political powers that be, it's been a very interesting experience. I think I've learned a lot. And there have been a couple of people on the town board, one of whom is now, due to redistricting, is now gone. But I mean, there have been a couple of people that have been empathetic to the cause. There have also been many more people that, quite frankly, really couldn't care less. I mean, they're only interested in doing whatever they think is going to keep them in office. That's putting it bluntly.
Mark your calendar. It's happening this Saturday. Join us this Saturday to learn the art of trap, neuter, return, a powerful way to transform the lives of community cats. Brought to you by Community Cats Podcast and Neighborhood Cats. This session is for anyone who wants to turn their passion for cats into action. Whether you're a seasoned caretaker or just starting out, there's something for everyone to learn. Don't wait. Reserve your spot now at communitycatspodcast.com/get TNR certified. Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now. Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com.
Are you passionate about making spay-neuter services more accessible? Join us for the 2024 United Spay Alliance online conference on October 12th and 13th, hosted by the Community Cats Podcast and the United Spay Alliance. This two-day virtual event brings together animal welfare experts offering presentations on starting low-cost spay-neuter programs, fundraising, community outreach, and more. Learn what's working from professionals and volunteers and get inspired with new strategies to help control the cat population. Register today at communitycatspodcast.com/spayallday and be part of the change.
I'm curious. So when you've talked to these political officials, do you have information that you're sharing with them? Like, we estimate that the community needs X amount of spay-neuter appointments in order to reduce the number of cats that are... Do you have any metrics to, like, say these are the amount of cats that need support and the amount of families that own cats that aren't able to afford services?
Well, we've given them just of pet owners and cat owners. And I think, if I remember correctly, I think 40% of pets owned are cats. Out of the money that's being spent at the dog shelter, for instance, there are a lot of people that have cats that are basically getting no help whatsoever for those cats. And like I said, if something happens to those people, unforeseen or otherwise, there's going to be a problem. It's also interesting to note that there's something called the State Companion Grant Fund, which I've spoken to the chairman of numerous times, a guy named Dr. Chico. Anyway, North Hempstead, for instance, that program has got, it's a $5 million endowment, down from $8 million. But anyway, it's a $5 million endowment basically meant to help municipal animal shelters. North Hempstead got $200,000 from that program in 2019. And that money was basically wasted, because what ended up happening was that they tried to do, the dog shelter that we have on the town is built on a landfill. It's in a woeful state of disrepair. And it's sort of like trying to plug holes in the, using a Band-Aid in the Hoover Dam. It's just not working. And the town ended up wasting whatever money was spent there, because they had to end up giving it back to the state because the work was never completed. And a similar thing happened this past year in 2023. So in other words, my point is that money could have gone towards the construction of a new joint shelter that would take in cats and dogs.
So it sounds like in this situation, there's challenges for both cats and dogs in the town. And there's a process there of trying to get access to more funds, organized effort. And I'm going to be honest, Stuart, I tend to be more of the person of like, oh, let's just figure out how to do this as a nonprofit and not get involved in the political side of things. But it really sounds like you are convinced that this is the best way to go. And you aren't saying, oh, let's start our own 501c3. Let's try and get donations or grants or that kind of thing.
I have a 501c3, actually. I'm involved with various animal groups. And we also actually have a personal 501c3 that is not, it's not directed towards animal groups. We've given actual money towards some animal groups, which wasn't easy to do because the actual board members weren't, I mean, that wasn't what that particular 501c was formed for, but we actually have been able to give money relatively, depends, everybody has a different definition of what's a larger amount or what's not, but we haven't actually been able to help certain animal groups that I deal with here in Long Island and one in Queens as well. As far as the actual existing already nonprofits over here, I've worked with them on that, but it's the amount of money that most of them are small. And for instance, I can tell you that I've been involved, I'm not so much now, but I was involved with Best Friends, which I'm sure you're familiar with, for quite some time, and was actually a decent donor to Best Friends for a number of years. In fact, I'm supposed to have a meeting with them, I think, next Wednesday in the city for the first time in years. But anyway, they've opened up a facility now in Lower Manhattan, somewhere down in Soho. But what they're doing is they're pulling animals specifically from the ACC, Animal Care and Control. So, I mean, all these, there are not enough animal care and control facilities. There are a few of them in the metropolitan area. I think Brooklyn has one. I don't think there's one in Queens. I think Staten Island has one as well. As far as I know, there are three of them. But anyway, the point is that these animals are all, that there's not enough space there. During COVID, they basically shut down after a while. They just couldn't take in any more animals, particularly cats. And the individuals that have problems that need to place animals, particularly cats, of course, they can't get them into some place like Best Friends. And that's a large, well-endowed rescue group. North Shore is another example, which is a very wealthy rescue group as well. They basically take kittens in from down south, which is great. I understand that the kittens get put down, even friendly kittens down south. But they basically will only take animals from you that are, they'll take kittens that are very friendly and very healthy. If you go there with a kitten that has a cold, they won't take it. And they won't take ferals, and they won't generally take older cats.
Yeah. It's what's called a limited admission organization, so that they are able to decide who they can take in and who they can't take in and that kind of thing. So, you know, there's the open admission. There's all this different language in the sheltering world. There's open admission. There's limited admission. There's no kill. And I mean, I operated as an open admission, no kill organization, and people say that's impossible to create, but it is possible if you have a target area, a very focused community, you can, as long as you provide the appropriate resources for the community as a whole, and you're using your sheltering as a strategic facility for safety net, as well as placement of sterilized cats and kittens into the community. Because if you don't have an option, and this is something that's new to me, and my strategic thought is that if you don't have a cat shelter in your community that's adopting out spayed or neutered cats or kittens, then you will have an uptick in cat overpopulation because the community itself won't be able to be fully spayed or neutered. You're going to have an uptick of those oops litters and that kind of thing, which is, it's kind of new in my mind in the strategic thought process about why we do need community-based cat sheltering. And it's to get the population of cats sterilized and really be able to kind of control that supply that is accessible.
Well, I agree with you. And unfortunately, many of the smaller 501c3s are really underfunded. And I'm friends with somebody that's running one. I won't even mention the name, but it's in Queens. You know, and I mean, she's working night and day on this. Basically, she feeds between 150 and 200 cats a night at 15 different stops and tries to rescue when she can. And at the moment, she has like 30 cats in her house. But I mean, it's just out of control. And the ASPCA that was in Glendale and Queens is shut down. So there's nobody fixing cats in Queens at the moment. They are trying to build another one, which I think is actually underway, but you know, that'll be late in the year. There's nowhere to take them in. There's nowhere to get them fixed. So everything that's done has to be done out of their own pocket and every other rescuer's own pocket. And I mean, it's asking a lot of people. I tend to expect a lot from people, but a lot of people don't have the means. They see these animals that either are injured, young cats, they need to be fixed. They don't know where to take them. They don't have the money to get them fixed. They don't have the money to take them to the vet. These are things, I mean, people, I can certainly say in this community, people are paying high taxes, very high taxes, and they're entitled to get like what I consider like basic humanist resources for their tax money. Uh-huh. And your cat shelter, I think, is one of them.
Yeah. I find the whole arena very fascinating, again, because it's not my comfort zone. Do you feel, what's your hope for the situation in North Hempstead? Do you have a timeline? Are you hoping to get a proposal like that the community votes for, or what are your next steps?
You know, I think what this really boils down to, and maybe it, in some way it's human nature and maybe it's a bit unfortunate in a way, but I think that our goal in the things we're trying to do is to put as much public pressure on the town representatives as possible and to spread as much awareness as possible. Because the more people that are aware of the problem, the more people are going to ask the town to do something about it. When people aren't aware, then they're not going to do anything. I mean, they're not going to put any pressure on them. And if they put no pressure on them, nothing's ever going to get done. It's not like suddenly these town board members are going to decide that, you know what, this is the right thing to do. We're going to do it. You'd like to believe that would happen, but it just doesn't. So the only way, as an example of that, I remember one of the town reps a while back, and she was one of the ones that was actually like somewhat empathetic towards us. We wanted to meet with her. She said she had no meetings available for the next 6 weeks. There's a big fair in Fort Washington, the beginning of every June, called Harbor Fest. We had a booth. We had people stopping by. We told them all to call. These are the reps. Call them if you feel strongly about this. They got a lot of phone calls. They reached out to me a few days later to try to set up a meeting. So obviously that public pressure that they got, those phone calls that they got, the emails that they got, obviously had an impact on them. And that's the way that this thing has to work. I mean, I wish it weren't that hard, you know, but I do foresee something happening, and I do foresee us getting a cat shelter, whether they're forced to do it by changing the law so that municipalities have to take in cats. What the timeline is for that, I don't know, but we're dealing with one particular representative from Brooklyn that's very animal friendly. In fact, she helped to get the decloying bill passed. You know what I mean? Those are the sort of people that we need, or whether it's just more pressure being put on them, whatever it takes, we need to get this done. And I'm in this for the long haul.
Yeah, sounds like it. No, that sounds like it.
It is.
Stuart, if people are interested in reaching out to you, how would they do that?
Through a number of ways. First of all, I would say that I would give my email address, which is SRK, Sam Ralph Kilometer Trader, TRADER, at AOL.com. They can also, we have a Facebook page. They could reach out, which is North Hempstead Needs a Cat Shelter. We also have a domain, which we're now going to convert that into a webpage. The domain is help, T-O-N-H, Town of North Hempstead Cats.com. Again, to repeat, lptonhcats.com. And I have no problem with people calling me if they're so inclined, which is, my phone number is 516-578-8587. You know, I'm happy to talk to people that either are facing the same problem in where they live, or that have suggestions, or that live near us and want to help.
Excellent. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
All I can say is that it's a situation that I'm sure people are faced with in other municipalities as well. It probably isn't unique somewhere in neighboring states. I'm sure that they could have the same problem. And maybe by people working together and sharing ideas will help. I mean, other people may have ideas that we haven't thought of or may have better ways of getting to their representatives. Whatever it is, the bottom line is that these cats in particular are out there basically suffering. They've always been second-class citizens, unfortunately. I'm not quite sure why. I think cats personally are very misunderstood. But anyway, cats need the help, and we're doing the best we can to try to help them. And ultimately, we're going to succeed, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Excellent. Stuart, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on the show, and I hope we'll have you back on when there's a shelter in town.
Stacey, I very much appreciate you having us here, and what can I say? I'm sure we will talk further about that, and anything I can do, I'll be happy to do.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.